History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that really should not go untold. And by now we should know they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to take a little initiative and ask a few questions, and then invest enough time to listen patiently as memories from long ago take on new relevance in the here and now. We want to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in the process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we do find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. It is Father's Day weekend, and we get to meet a father today who recently got to enjoy quite an experience with his son, an honor flight to Washington, D.C. We'll hear about that before we're done with Navy veteran Bob McAvoy of Clovis, California, originally from the Keystone State of Pennsylvania. So first of all, tell me about your childhood. You grew up in Pittsburgh. What do you remember about those early years?
Living with my grandparents, because it was the Great Depression, and the jobs were hard to get, and I recall being in my grandparents' home, except for one item about the big fire across the street in southern Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Seeing the rabbits that my dad and his brother brought home in the Depression years, when he tried to put meat on the table. It's one of the things of my earliest in that fire. But in my grandparents' home, my dad and his brother had by then hopped on a train and went to California seeking jobs. My sister and I, I recall, at my grandparents' home, they had, my grandparents were members of a card club of neighbors, and my sister and I had to dust. They came down for card parties. Well, this was a dining room thing, a table, and it was pretty large. It was old-fashioned and big, heavy legs on it, and Grandma always had a big cover over the top of it. It was beautiful furniture, but when my sister had to do the dusting, we had to get under the thing, under the table, and get it, and we used to sit under there and giggle. And I still remember, we were so close. It was just a year and a half between us in age. We'd get under there and start giggling and laugh our heads off. But not with anybody here, of course. We weren't even be allowed to see what they were doing. We had to get out of there.
Your mother left the family when you were very young, and then your father comes out to California for work. So in many ways, you were raised by your grandparents, right?
Exactly, yes, indeed. That was most of my bringing up.
Your grandfather, who raised you, he was a veteran of a war that most of us don't hear too much about. When did your grandfather serve?
He was in that Spanish-American War. That's all I know.
And I'm always interested because the war interrupted so many lives and it changed everybody's lives. Do you remember before the war having some thoughts in your head of, hey, when I grow up, this is what I'm going to do, this is who I'm going to try to become, or any of those dreams or ambitions you remember?
No. Honestly, the biggest thing that happened to me was in my very early, maybe 10 or 11 years old, I got a balloon-tired bicycle for Christmas. Wow! I was eye out of sight, man. From then on, they never saw me. Honest to Pete, I'd get on that thing after breakfast in the morning, and if it wasn't at school time, what I'm trying to say is, when I got free time to get out of the house and on a bicycle, wow, I went. I mean, it didn't matter how many miles I was going. I was just going just to be doing it, and I grew up on that darn thing. I mean, my legs are so, these things have a lot of muscle in them, but they're kind of leaving away from me because I don't use them enough anymore, but they're strong enough to hold me up. The only thing is my equilibrium is not too good, so I have to be careful when I'm walking.
So you mentioned December 7th, 1941, and it seems like everybody has some kind of memory. What's your memory of that day?
It was a Sunday morning. And I think I mentioned previously about being a Catholic family, so they were practicing Catholic family too, but my grandparents are kind of strict, but I just take this all in because I'm just a youngster. And on that day, we were sitting in the living room, and we had this big round radio that everybody had at that time. And we were listening to the news, and when all just came on, bam, everybody looked at each other, and the whole family, just my grandmother and grandfather were there, and my sister and I. Uncle Ray must have been there because he was still living at home at that time. The news to me was, I don't think all that came to me at once, but maybe a day or two later, honestly, it sank in then. And like I told you, I wasn't too good to my grandparents in raising us because, like I told you, after I got that bicycle, I was gone. I was hardly ever at home anymore. So I had that kind of atmosphere that I just wanted to do what I wanted to do. I'd go by an orchard, and I'd go over, and I'd pull an apple down off the tree and keep on going. Something like that, you know. Anyway, after the December 7th thing, and the next day, I guess I started thinking about it, and also them said, go in the Navy. I wanted to join the Navy and let it ride around on the ships.
Well, let's talk about that. Why not the Army or the Marines or anything else? Why the Navy?
Because I was so skinny and slow and small in stature. I didn't develop muscles or anything like that. And I thought to myself, going in the Army, they got a lot of gear they got to carry around. In fact, that was a mistake on my part because, like, getting off to the side at the training camp when I went in the Navy, was up in Newport, Rhode Island in December, and cold. Rhode Island's out of on the East Ocean, Atlantic Ocean. December, colder than H-E-double-L. And it was a riot. There were, I don't know how many, but we were only there 2 weeks. That's the emergency, going through it to get you in there and tell you what to do and get the heck out and get in action. So it was only 2 weeks spent at it, but the only thing we did was march. We learned how to march together, and we had wooden rifles that we carried around with us, and we'd do all that things, you know, that the Marines do, like a bam. Those guys are something else. That's when we came down to South Boston. After 2 weeks, took us down there, put us aboard the USS San Diego, which was commissioned in January the 10th, 1942. We got stored up and everything, and I don't know what the date was when we left there, but when we left, our first cruise was up to East Coast, and we went north up to Maine. We went into Portland, Maine. We anchored out there for a night or so, but it was so beautiful up there. There are small islands all around Portland, and it's just fantastic views. And my head was going right there. I really enjoyed it, you know. And I'll never forget my first step when you get out onto the ocean. We turned out of the harbor and start going north. The sea was pretty calm, except it was wavy, huge waves, but they were soft. But the ship was going up and down like this. And I'm out there on the deck, and the first step I take, the ship goes out from under me, and I go, woo! Holy macaroni, did I get my sea legs in a hurry. And I just kind of concentrated on that. Pretty soon it just grew on me. It didn't cause me anything ever since then. I could just take a bit. It was an instant. I mean, that's something you learn, otherwise you're going to be all over the place. But that first step... It would always come up to my chin. So anyway, we go up there and go through them. Then we turn around and start south. And from there down to Virginia, we did 40 knots in a ship on the ocean. And man, that thing just shaked like you were in a, I don't know what the thing was, that some of the huge air vents you see on the ships catch the air to go down below deck. Those things shivered and shaked, and some of them fell down. We were really bucking that ship up. 40 knots is unheard of. Anyway, we got all the stuff fixed up, and then down there, go down to the Panama Canal, shoot through there, come up to San Diego. The first thing I know, we're out to sea. We stopped in Pearl Harbor. Oil all over the harbor from the all the ships in the December 7th attack. Oh, it was terrible looking stuff and smelled. But we got everything fixed up there, and then the next thing I know, we're going out with the Hornet. And what I failed to tell you about was that the San Diego was one of four anti-aircraft cruisers that were built the same time, I guess. The San Diego, the San Juan, the Atlanta, and the Juno. The Juno was the poorest one, because when she engaged around Guadalcanal, she got sunk in I don't know how many minutes, but almost the whole crew got lost on the darn thing. And right away, all those four ships were changed. No surface engagements. All were anti-aircraft and mostly assigned to carriers, because they're the ones that needed our protection to get some stuff in the air so that the Japs can't get at the carriers. So I get back to where we get into the South Pacific. The Hornet was our first ship that we protected. We were assigned to them for protection. I'm sitting in the seventh turret on the second from the last on the back of the ship. And I was going for gunner's mate because I had been assigned to that turret. I was called the trainer, which I moved the turret in a horizontal position. And the guy on the other side, it was called the pointer, and he controlled the turrets in the up and down side. And then we had, of course, the captain of the turret, first class gunner's mate. He was in charge. I don't know about the advertising. McAvoy, you're going the wrong way. I said, holy mackerel. I'd have to turn back. I didn't do any of them. When he tests that, you go, whoa, it scared the hell out of me. So I was, man, I just wore my arms up. I was turning out like a steam engine, you know, because I realized what it was meant to be. We got to do this fast. There's an alert on. That means there may probably be planes in the air, Japanese planes. So you got to be online. And he was just doing his duty. he's hollered like it in. My hair went up in the air like that. Because I thought, oh, well, I'm going the wrong way. But that didn't happen very often after that, boy. I had to make sure I was going the right way. Port of starboard. You get out there and then just turn the switch. Now that's all I had to do, which was very hard. But what I was leading up to, the first thing of the war meant to me, we were out with the Hornet. We were cruising along in a group around the Guadalcanal area at the start of the war. I'm sitting on the outside my turret. It's just a sunny day, beautiful weather. We're cruising along at 30 knots. Because this, the guy in charge of the Admiral or something, he was known for his speed of staying at 30 knots, because that's hard for a submarine to get at you. But anyway, that's what happened. I'm sitting there, and it's just the steering room, so I'm looking at where we've been, where we're cruising along. The second in command on the ship, it was your lieutenant commander, and I forget what his name was. He was out walking, and he was on here on the starboard side aft of the ship, just out walking. We weren't in any emergency situation. I'm looking at him, and I see him, and I see nothing's going on. But all of a sudden, I looked past him, where my eyes went by him, and I looked out, and there's bubbles coming towards me. I looked, oh, my God, it's a torpedo. And damn it. he looked, I guess he was watching, he saw it too. He turned around and went, zoom, going up the side of the ship. And I looked at that and I watched that thing. And it was no more than 100 yards out and went right past our stern. My God, I said, that was it. Suddenly it woke in my head, man, we were at war. You were almost gone at war. Because that thing hit us, we were gone. But it went right by. And fortunately, it didn't hit any of the ship in the convoy. But for me, that said, this is serious, man. You better get on it and be more alert. And I grew up. I'm telling you, it scared the hell out of me. That's the only thing, as far as my personal being, that happened to me that I was aware of. Of course, scared, too. It was just something to remember. At another time, several months later, we got one of those new battleships in the convoy beside us. I was doing again outside the turret because there wasn't any alert on. It's going along, and we were all doing 30 knots, and that was a beautiful ship, a battleship, with a new battleship. And all at once, I'm looking at it, and man, a huge wave of water goes splatting up in the air, and she takes a torpedo on the port bow, and that water went zoom up. I was like, holy Toledo. Then I heard this thing, and didn't throw it them any good. They just kept on sailing. I mean, it didn't get out of the convoy, didn't do anything. It just, okay, you got your shot. But I couldn't blow. I was glad it wasn't the Ark ship, or we'd have been gone.
Am I remembering correctly that you were there in October of 42 when the Hornet was sunk in the Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands? Yes. You witnessed that?
Yeah. Oh, what I remember is those guys jumping off it. That was terrible. We had slowed down because when they were jumping off, and I think there was a destroyer close by that we were picking up some of them, but our captain of the ship probably was ordered to stand by off a little off from it in case the destroyer couldn't get in and need some more, we had to get in, or try to protect it from torpedoes if there was a Jap sub in the area, which of course there was. And so it was a kind of a tedious way for us. We'd slow them down because we're action-wise, you know, we're always going at 25, 30 knots most of the time, and this is all in the Guadalcanal area. That was the scene of activity for the war at the beginning. That was the tough part of the war, that the carriers, which were so needed for shooting down the Japs, and we had to protect them in whatever way we could.
I'm just interested in what you actually saw, because that had to be pretty surreal or jarring for you to see what was happening there.
Yeah, I can't gauge distances, but it was close up enough for us, and I was a little nervous because we were just sitting there waiting. But anyway, that was what was happening in my eyesight, and that seeing those guys jumping over was really tough.
And there would be more challenging days ahead for Bob McAvoy. It's time for our first break. But when we come back, the moment he was jarred awake by something colliding with his ship and penetrating its hull not too far from where Bob was sleeping. And before we're done, his honor flight experience too. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,500 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.